Blog Talk Radio.
Talladega, Alabama, you're in the pit stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Big shout out and thanks to Talladega Super Speedway and their staff out there, Mr. Russell Branham, Price Mason, Public Relations, and Mr. Grant Lynch, President of Talladega Super Speedway. As Grant always says, this is more than a race, this is Talladega. Tickets are on sale now for the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series Fred's 250 October 18th. And the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series Geico 500 October 19th. To purchase your tickets, call 877-GO-TO-DEGA or go to TalladegaSuperspeedway.com. How's everybody doing tonight? The number to call in is 215-383-3681. And our guest tonight, before we get everything, just want to throw this out there before we get everything started, waiting on Stephen and Reverend Joe. At 7:15 Eastern, it's Joey Gase, driver of the number 52 Chevrolet in the NASCAR Nationwide Series for Jimmy Means Racing. And at 7:30 Eastern Time, Eric Wallace, rear tire care for Carl Edwards in the number 99 Ford owned by Ralph Spinway Racing. The number to call in again is 215-383-3681. And we've got some, I see Suzanne has somebody in the screening room right now. It's probably our Reverend. We'll wait on that for just a minute. My good friend Stephen Wilson, he's going to cover what happened from the NASCAR Nationwide Series at lost my paperwork at Chicagoland this weekend. Stephen will cover that, and at this time, let's go ahead and bring Stephen on. And hey, Stephen Wilson, how you doing tonight, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. We get a little bit of rain, and it's not that hot down here. How's everything up your way?
It's just a little hot up here today. It's not too bad. It's the rain. It's kind of been holding off. We were supposed to get some storms, but at least they all held off.
Yeah. All that summertime pop-up thunderstorm, like they always say. Well, Stephen, our Reverend has not made it. So if you want me to, because we got a big show. Not everything's going to be full. We probably going to go 2 hours, and I'll go ahead and do our invocation right now. If everyone please bow your heads, our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive them that trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. And here with our national anthem is Miss Donna Price Elkins from Talladega Super Speedway.
Yeah!
Okay, Stephen, like I say every week, if that don't bring chill bumps up on you, I don't know what will. Now, Stephen, I'll let you have the floor. I'll let you, you were going to do the, cover the Nationwide Series stuff, and have you got the statement from Mike Gibson about the passing of Dr. John Melvin, or would you like me to read that off?
I'll let you go ahead and read that off. It's buried somewhere in my email.
Okay. Well, I went ahead and printed it. This is a statement. this is from Kerry Tharp from NASCAR. Put this out. Statement from NASCAR President Mike Hilton on the passing of Dr. John Melvin. Daytona Beach, Florida, July 18, 2014, which was my birthday. NASCAR and the entire motorsports industry lost a giant on Thursday with the passing of Dr. John Melvin. Dr. Melvin was a pioneer in the field of driver safety, particularly in the area of the driver restraint systems, which I think they were talking about the Hans device. His many contributions as a safety consultant to NASCAR for more than 13 years forever changed the sport. We lost a colleague and a friend. Unquote from Mr. Mike Hill. Okay. And, Stephen, we talked earlier. We'll let you have the floor and talk about the NASCAR Nationwide Series, and then I'll just hit a little bit on the ARCA stuff, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Not a problem. So Saturday night we ran a little off race. Sprint Cup Series was off this weekend, so the Nationwide Series was there at Chicagoland Speedway for the 4th annual Enjoy Illinois 300. Chase Elliott brought home the checkered flag for his 3rd win of the season in the NASCAR Nationwide Series. It's also his 13th top 10 in 2014. Trevor Bayne was 2nd. And his 3rd top 10 finish in 7 races there at Chicagoland Speedway. He also, this was his also 13th top 10 finish of 2014. Chase Elliott also the highest finishing rookie. And leaving Chicagoland Speedway, Chase Elliott leads the point standings by 7 points over teammate Regan Smith. Brian Scott was the Nationwide Series Dash for Cash winner, bringing home $100,000 based on his finishing position at this weekend as the highest finishing Nationwide regular per the 4 drivers that were set at New Hampshire Motor Speedway 2 weekends ago. This weekend going into Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the 4 Nationwide Dash for Cash drivers will be Chase Elliott, Trevor Bayne, Ty Dillon, and Brian Scott yet again. Another side note to that is Brian Scott is also has won the first 2 Nationwide Dash for Cash races already held this year, and this is his 3rd time appearing in the Dash for Cash going into this weekend at Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
That's good, Stephen. And I'll come over to the ARCA side of it. I'll just hit on here just a little bit of it. The 2014 ARCA Racing Series presented by Menards Event Number 11, Chicagoland Speedway, Juliet, Illinois, 7/19/14, the Ansaugh Active Armor 150. And I'll scroll down here. The Menards Pole Award presented by Ansaugh with John West Townley. A time of 31.374, speed of 172.117 mile per hour. Pole with margin of victory was 0.795 seconds. Cautions was 6 for 32 laps. Time of the race was 1 hour, 21 minutes, and 50 seconds. Average speed was 109.980. Lap leaders, Will Kimmel, 1 through 2, led 2. Gallagher, 3 through 72, led 70. Justin Boston, 73 through 94 laps, led 22. And Mason Mitchell, 95 through the 100, which was your winner, Mr. Mason Mitchell, from West Des Moines, Iowa. Team and car. I don't want to mess this up. Wildlife Foundation of Florida, TTS Board. But I want to give a big shout-out to my good friend, Mr. Will Kimmel. A lot of people don't know. He had a situation during the race, Steve. I don't know if I talked to you, me and him talked. He had qualified 3rd and finished 4th. But not long into the race, he lost 3rd gear. So you could imagine with him start when they done a restart, starting in 2nd, going to 4th, and everybody else going from 2nd to 3rd and going through the gearbox. I think if our good friend Will Kimmel would have had 3rd gear, he might have come out of there with a W. What do you think, Steve?
tell you the truth, I'm not even sure. Unfortunately, Fox Sports 2 isn't available to me, so I was not able to watch the race. I was only able to follow along a little bit on Twitter. So I really just I'm not sure. I mean, that's tough anytime you lose a gear in the car, and, you know, especially, you know, third gear, some of the high-end stuff, it definitely hits you with the straightaway speeds, especially at a place like Chicagoland Speedway where you just don't have that high-end gear. It's also a deficit to overcome any gear and transmission issue, especially if you lose something in the low end, especially if you've got to get off a pit road.
Yeah. You're exactly right, Steve. And I'll read off the top 10 finishers here from Chicagoland Speedway on the Angel Active Armor 150. And then while we're waiting on our guest, Joey Gase, coming on earlier, or coming on here in just a little bit, or just a few minutes, I think. But anyway, the top 10, the number one finisher was Mason Mitchell. Won the Ansel Active Armor 150. Finishing second was Justin Boston. Finishing third was Matt Tift. Finishing fourth was our good friend Will Kimmel. Fifth was Cody Coughlin. Sixth was Spencer Gallagher. Seventh is our point footer, Grant Infringer, another good friend of ours from Fairhope, Alabama. Finishing eighth is Justin Allison, another good friend of ours. Ninth, Tom Hessert. And tenth was Frank Kimmel. And, Stephen, while we're waiting on Joey, do you have anything for his Save the Speedway or anything on your website you'd like to talk about? You got the floor, bud.
No, I mean, I really don't have much to talk about right now, although, you know, there's not going to be a...
Are you there, bud?
You still there? Sorry about that.
Yes,
I had dropped out on you real quick.
Are you there, bud? Okay, Stephen. Stephen's probably got some of his youngins in the background wanting to eat. You know how they are, but Stephen's still there, I think, or either he had dropped. While we got a few minutes, I'm going to read off the Eldora Speedway 2014 National Camper World Truck Series event schedule. I'm not going to read anything off today. Starting tomorrow, I'm not going to read everything off. This is from NASCAR, the event schedule at Eldora. At 10 a.m. in the morning, 10 to 11 is NASCAR Camping World Truck Series first practice. 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. is NASCAR Camping World Truck Series final practice. This is all tomorrow, Wednesday, July 23rd. At 5:10 p.m., this is all Eastern time, NASCAR Camping World Truck Series qualifying. Then from 7 p.m. Eastern until 7:40 p.m. Eastern, and it says approximate times, I have five qualifying races for 10 laps, just like heat races. Then at 8:15 p.m. approximately, you know, they want to say that because it might go over, what they call a last chance race, 15 laps. We watched it last year, and, you know, it's sort of a last, I think Norm Bennett might have got in on the last chance deal last year, but I'm going to tell y'all, race fans, if y'all want to watch some racing, y'all need to watch this Eldora Speedway truck race tomorrow night on TV. Will be Fox Sports 1, MRN, and SiriusXM has the radio, and I'm going to tell you, you cannot go wrong by watching this race on dirt that Tony Stewart, where he's bought Eldora Speedway. I mean, it is really something. But that's just a little quick rundown about what's going on tomorrow before the big race at Eldora. And I think Steven's popped back in here. He must have dropped. Yeah, let's bring Steven back on. Okay, Steven, we got you, bud. I went ahead and read off some of the event stuff for tomorrow, Wednesday, July 23rd at Eldora, you know, about the heat races and the practice and all that stuff.
Okay. Did you already cover some of the changes this year that NASCAR announced a few weeks ago with the race?
No, sir, I didn't. I had thought about it, but I'll let you cover that.
Yeah, just a couple of things that NASCAR has changed this year from last year. Last year was the first time they had raced on dirt in 41 years. first time any of the series had been on dirt in 41 years. The truck series was racing at Eldora Speedway, Tony Stewart's track. So this year they've tweaked a couple little things as far as the races are concerned. The pit stops during the competition cautions this year are now going to be totally optional. Last year they were mandatory for the inaugural event. One of the other things that they changed, each qualifying race will now be 10 laps as far as that's concerned. Random draw will determine the qualifying order. Last year they used practice speed. So one of the other biggest ones for the team owners is going to be the owner points are now going to be awarded to the top five team owners whose trucks don't transfer into the main feature. Last year, any team that did not advance did not earn owner points.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good, Stephen. I had heard about it, but I'm glad you put it out there for our fans to actually see, you know, and hear exactly what they're talking about. And before I get into a deep conversation, I thought about bringing up the RTA, the new Race Team Alliance that some of the team owners have formed with. I can't think of that guy's name. What was that guy's name? It's the chairman of it. Stephen, have you?
Robert Kaufman, co-owner of Mike Waltrip Racing.
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to put that on the back burner because we got Mr. Joey Gase, driver of the number 52 Chevrolet for Jimmy Means Racing, coming on. We want to bring Joey Gase on, Stephen, and give him a big, big shout-out.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Joey, you're in the pit stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio. How you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Oh, yes, Joey. Thank you. And anytime you want to come back on, you just shoot me a text or whatever. But my phone just went off. That's Adam Alexander. I'll have to talk to him in just a minute. And, Stephen, let me let you take over. Let me get back with AA.
All right, buddy. Hey, Joe. This is Steve Wilson with SpeedwayDigest.com. I know you've run about 60 races there over your four-year career there in the Nationwide Series. Prior to that, you had run some ASA, some ARCA races, and USAR and K&A Pro East Series. Tell us a little bit about how you got interested into racing, how you kind of came up in some of your some of the people that you looked up to coming throughout your career in the short tracks, and now you're in the Nationwide Series.
Okay, well, my dad raced before I did just at our local track here in Cedar Rapids called Hawkeye Downs, and he raced as long as I could remember. He raced before I was born, and so I grew up around it, and it's just something I kind of always knew I wanted to do and was going to do, and I just loved it. And I started racing go-karts when I was 8 years old, and when I turned 14, I started racing my dad's car and started to move up my way up. And when I was 16, I was the youngest ever to win the late model championship at our local track. And from there, I went and drove for a development team, SS Greenlight Racing, in late models and did a few Can-Am races and worked my way up since then.
And, you know, it's tough always that we talk to a lot of these drivers, especially because you've been in this situation where you were planning to earn the Rookie of the Year championship. I think that was in 2012, I believe. And, of course, you know, with sponsorship, that's kind of sidelined you, and you only ran a partial season that year. What do you feel is the biggest obstacle that you're having to overcome, and not only you, but some of the other Nationwide drivers that are out there trying to compete week in and week out to find that sponsorship to be out there and run full time?
It's just really difficult to get any sponsorship right now. And like our sponsorship, we're happy for a smaller amount, which seems huge to us. And to the big teams, our amount, they may not even put anywhere on their car. Like I would say our sponsorship or What we spend in the entire year, the top teams spend like two races. And just racing against that type of competition is just, it's so tough. They have the best everything, all the resources. But it's fun though when you do beat those guys and you know what you have and you know what they have. It really makes you feel accomplished, the whole team, and it's a good feeling.
And you're working this year with Jimmy Means, who started his NASCAR career in the 70s. How much help has he been in developing your career as not only a driver, but you as being having to deal with the week-in and week-out grind of the NASCAR series?
It helps a lot. I mean, he said he's been racing since the 70s, and he's been around it all his life, and he doesn't know anything else but racing. And just he knows there's going to be up and downs, and he knows there's nothing can do about it, and you just got to do the best you can with what you have, and he knows how to do that really well. And it's really amazing. Like, we only have 4 full-time guys, and our rest that are picked through every week is just volunteers that Jim's met from racing.
And looking out towards the future of your career, not only this year, but you're fairly young. I think you're 21 years old, and correct me if I'm wrong on that, but you're still fairly young. You have a lot ahead of you in your career. Where do you see yourself going in the future?
I think he dropped, Stephen. Yeah, he did. Joey dropped. Maybe he'll come back here in a second.
Okay.
While we're waiting on Joey Gase, driver of the number 52, Jimmy Means Chevrolet in the NASCAR Nationwide Series, well, if you want to, Stephen, we'll talk about this new race team alliance. I've read something, a little bit of stuff on it. I've been watching the Mike Hilton deal and watched Race Hub yesterday. I don't want to bring that up, Will, because what happened with what you had going on. But they were talking about it yesterday when I got home. I'm not real happy with what happened, but I don't want to express my feelings. But, yeah, and Suzanne's got a caller coming back in. I think it might be Joey. And if it is, we'll talk about this new RTA alliance, from the owners later. I hope they're not trying to form a union, like they tried to earlier, back in the day. Well, here he is. Stephen, I bring Joey back on with you. Okay, Joey, you're back in the pit stop. Tim and Stephen Wilson, you go ahead, Stephen, and finish your questions asking Joey.
Hey, Joey. Just my final question that I have for you is that you're still fairly young. You're 21, and correct me if I'm wrong on that, but you have a lot ahead of you as far as your career is concerned, not only in NASCAR. Where do you see yourself going at into the future from you running Nationwide full-time this year?
My ultimate goal is to get the Sprint Cup and win a championship. I think that should really be anyone's goal that's trying to make it in racing. But I'd be really happy if I could somehow get up in the Sprint Cup in the next 5 years and maybe get a top Nationwide team or get a big sponsor and make my current Nationwide team a top team. And just through a lot of hard work and keeping my name out there, I think we can get that done. And through all my support from my sponsors and all my support from Donate Life and the Donate Life movement.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for coming on tonight. And I wish you the best of luck in the future. And we'll be out there cheering you on every week.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
10-4, Joey. We sure do appreciate you taking time out. Just a couple of quick questions. Have you got anything lined up for next year? I hate to ask this. I don't want to start this silly seasonal stuff going this early and everything, but have you got anything in concrete for next year, Joey?
I don't yet. We're still working on that, and we'll see what happens here the next couple months.
Okay, 10-4. And, Joey, again, I keep harping on, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to call in our little radio show. And I'm going to give you the floor and let you thank anybody that you want to thank. That's the way me and Stephen do it. You can thank your sponsors, thank anybody that's helped you get where you're at. We'll give you all the time you want, Joey. You go ahead, bud.
Okay, well, thank you. I just got to thank my dad, my Uncle Jim, my grandparents, my whole family, my girlfriend, Donate Life and Iowa Donor Network for helping me out so much and letting me raise awareness and honor donor families. It's really, really special to have them, and I'll be raising awareness either way, but it's so much better just to have them as a sponsor. It's really, it's amazing how it works out, and I just got to thank Jimmy and the guys for letting me raise for them.
Okay, well, that sounds really great. And it's not Rolling Stone yet, but myself and Suzanne are probably going to come to Atlanta. And we're going to get our media stuff, so I'd love to meet you in Atlanta Labor Day weekend.
Okay, that sounds great. I hope to see you there.
Yes, sir, we will. And thanks again, Joey. And good luck, bud. Take care of yourself. Be safe.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Okay, Stephen, that was Joey Gase, driver in the NASCAR Nationwide Series for Jimmy Means Racing. Young kid's got some good composure. He can talk to the media too, can't he?
Yeah, he can. He's young and he's just getting started. He's only got a couple seasons in the NASCAR series, but you know, it's like anybody else that's young. It takes a while for him to get used to it, and yeah, he'll do good. He just has to find the right combination there with sponsorship, and he will go far in this sport if he can find that niche there with that sponsorship.
Yeah, I think he will too, Steve. And you know, just like we you know, me and you've hopped on this forever since you started this radio network and us talking chemistry. You got to have chemistry and all that. But anyway, while we're waiting on Eric Wallace, rear tire care for Carl Edwards on Jack Roush Fenway's number 99, that race team alliance, Stephen. I'll if you have any comments, we'll talk about that for a few minutes while we're on Eric.
As far as this race team alliance thing goes, I'm like everybody else. I have no clue what these guys are even trying to accomplish. You know, Rob Kaufman, the co-owner of Michael Waltrip Racing, those guys kind of put this deal together. And from my understanding, there's about 9 teams or so that are associated with this right now. Currently, they're what they consider their membership is anybody that runs 95% of the races or attempts to run 95% of the races in the Sprint Cup Series. And it seems like their ultimate goal is to kind of give one voice, maybe to give a little bit more marketing power out there, give them better maybe material rates on, you know, buying supplies and things of that nature, kind of go in as kind of like one voice is the way that it's been explained a couple of times. But nobody has really come out and said what their goals are. They've never, from the press release that they've put out, from the interviews that they've done, it seems like they really don't have a direction yet. And if they do have a direction, they're not letting anybody know that direction. And as far as it being a excuse me, my mind's just went completely blank.
A union.
There we go. A union. As far as
me
a union,
and you, me and you think alike, Stephen. Me and you think alike. Go ahead, bud.
Yeah, I mean, as far as it being a union, I'm not sure if it's a union yet or not. Like I said, you know, everything that I've read about this and everything that has been talked about so far, they've had these guys on the radio, especially Rob Kaufman there at Michael Waltrip Racing. He's talked about it a lot, but they really, from my perspective on it, and I think it's kind of the ongoing sentiment in NASCAR, is nobody really knows what these people want, and nobody has a clue other than them saying they want to be one voice. They want to represent and be one voice when they talk to NASCAR, they talk to suppliers. But, I mean, that can be a wide range of subjects that they can go and approach somebody with one voice. I know that somebody made the suggestion that maybe this is a way for all these teams. There's, like I said, 9 or 10 teams. There's something like 3,000 people employed at these teams. you know, somebody had suggested that maybe they're doing this to pull their resources as far as trying to help their own employees with maybe health insurance, retirements, you know, things of that nature. But as of right now, they have yet to really actually respond and say what they're looking at doing. And even, you know, Mike Helton has been out there. He's talked about it a little bit. And Brian France was just on, I think it was yesterday or day before. It was yesterday on SiriusXM NASCAR, talking about it's not so much that he has a problem with the RTA Race Team Alliance. It's that he wants to, NASCAR wants to listen to everybody. NASCAR doesn't want a collective voice. And they've made that statement prior, is, you know, take a look at the union that was formed, and even the Petties were involved into it at one time. And look at what happened then. Bill France shut them down, and NASCAR does not want a union, and these teams are just going to have to give that up. Now, there is some things in there that these teams could do, pulling their resources together to better each of their teams, but it's not going to work if they're going to go and try and collectively bargain with NASCAR on anything. One of the biggest things that somebody had suggested is that they're wanting more money from the TV package. Well, what most people don't already know is 65% of the TV package money goes directly back to the teams through purses, through sponsorship awards, through advertising deals and things of that nature, and only something like 10 or 15% goes to NASCAR themselves. So I don't know how much more the teams are actually going to be able to collectively bargain on that, considering that NASCAR is only getting 10%. 15% of the TV revenue.
Right. And Stephen, you covered that real well, because I had two or three things I was going to throw out there, but you covered both of them. I mean, we've got Eric Wallace. Suzanne's got him right there in the screening room. Eric Wallace, rear tire care for Carl Edwards and the number 99 Ford Roush Fenway Racing. We can bring Eric on, Stephen, and we can see what he thinks about it. Let's bring Mr. Eric Wallace on.
Let's get ready to rumble!
There you go, Mr. Eric Wallace. We bring everybody in with a bomb.
I like it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Eric. And if I messed up anything, you are the rear tire carrier for the number 99 on Carl Edwards Ford, correct?
Yes, sir, that's right.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I didn't mess nothing up. But anyway, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I want to thank my wife, Suzanne, for setting you up to come on. And I'll let you, my good friend and part owner here, Speedway Digest Radio Network, Stephen Wilson. We were just talking about the RTA, that Race Team Alliance. And I'm going to hand you over to Stephen, if that's okay, bud, and we'll see what your thoughts is on the RTA.
Okay.
Hey, Eric, thanks for coming on the show tonight. Yeah, we were just kind of touching a little bit here on the Race Team Alliance that was formed just a couple of weeks ago here, and I know Roush Fenway was one of the teams that was involved in this. From your perspective, do you feel that the Race Team Alliance is going to be able to use maybe a collective bargaining when it comes to things with behavioral support, not only with the employees, maybe to pull their resources with better health care, maybe better retirement, maybe some support as far as that's concerned, or do you think that the RTA themselves are looking more to collectively bargain against NASCAR for even maybe higher purses or maybe better payouts from the TV contracts? I just want to kind of know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't got really caught up into it too much, but from what I've seen, the little parts that I've seen, I think it's just the racing is forming an alliance to try to keep costs down on their teams. As far as, you know, NASCAR does a great job of trying to keep things going, but at the same time, sometimes it gets expensive. You know, when they make a small, minor, you know, rule change, it sounds minor to the fans, but to us, it's a $1 million change usually, you know. So I think they're trying to form an alliance where if it's something they don't agree with, that they can go to NASCAR and say, hey, we don't agree with this. You know, I think it's just they're trying to look out for themselves and take care of each other just to keep costs down because, you know, the racing in general just in the last 10 years has gotten outrageous just on the costs.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Consider most sponsorships out there these days are in the $20-30 million range for some primary sponsorship out there. But, you know, that does bring up a good point where these guys would have better bargaining power when you guys do go to the manufacturers, whether it's, you know, even something as small as buying brakes in bulk or buying sheet metal in bulk. You know, you've got a better bargaining power as far as that's concerned. Let's kind of flip this around just a little bit. You know, we've had a couple other crewmen here on the radio show for over time, and everybody has something that they do a little bit different as far as the way that they pit a car. The mechanics of pitting a car is fairly the same no matter what you do, but everybody does a little bit different. What is kind of your background as far as what you do to prepare week in and week out to pit the car on the weekends?
Well, I mean, we have a full-time street training coaches, and we practice four times a week. I mean, basically, if you look at it, if you go, you know, in depth on it, it's basically like a little NFL team. I mean, our strength training coach, he came from the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, we practice four times a week. We work out, do cardio just to get prepared. I mean, you know, people say you're only out there for 12 seconds, but it's a lot of work, you know, just trying to do that.
And how did you get interested as far as getting to the point that you wanted to pit a car week in and week out and go over the wall?
Well, I first started out at Roush. I was just working in the fab shop, trying to learn and do what I could. And I seen, you know, I always knew about pit stops and stuff, just being around racing my whole life, but I never knew, you know, how in-depth it was until I got working at Roush. And one of the guys I worked with in the shop said, "Hey, you should go carry tires. You're a pretty big boy." So I went out there and just started practicing. And, you know, my dad always told me, when you're going to do something, you got to put 110% into it. And that's what I did. I went out there every day, after work, at lunch, and just practice. And then, you know, they have a tryout come, and I go try out and wouldn't make it, get disappointed, want to quit, and I just had to keep digging. And then finally when my time came, it came, and then I had to take advantage of that, and that's what I've done.
And the pit crew guys that go over the wall on the weekends, by all means, most people think you guys jump the wall, pit the car, and that's the end of your day. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you guys do as a pit crew, not only just jumping the wall to pit those cars. What is kind of your average day out there preparing that car to get it out on the track for practice and get it into the race?
Yeah, I mean, we have what we call an A team and a B team. The A team flies out on a Thursday, and they prepare the car, get it ready. They do all the practice and tech and all the initial stuff before the race. And then you have the B team, and the B team is, they usually fly in the morning of the race, and they're the ones that go over the wall, and they usually prepare the pit roads, get the pit boxes up, get all the TVs ready, get everything prepared for the race as far as for pit stops, you know, and during the race. So those guys, they do that, and then those guys usually work in the shop during the week preparing the cars, getting them ready for the 18 guys to take on the road.
And my last question for you is that there's been a lot of changes in the sport, especially for the pit road guys that are going over the wall as far as safety is concerned, and it's a dangerous going over that wall every week in and week out for those 12, 13 seconds. What do you think is the most what do you think NASCAR has done the best to change the safety as far as you guys going over the wall?
I think the biggest thing is just pit road speed. When they didn't have pit road speed, it was dangerous. I mean, you had guys running 70, 80 miles an hour down pit road, and trying to pit a race car doing that is, you know, crazy. I tell people all the time, I'm crazy for jumping out in front of a car for a living. So I think that's the biggest thing, that, and then helmets. I mean, you see guys get hit every week, you know, getting laid up on the hood of the cars and stuff. I mean, helmets are big.
All right, well, thank you, Eric. I appreciate you coming on the show tonight. I'm going to hand you back over to Tim. I think he's got a couple questions for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Eric. I want to give you a big shout-out for what you do for our sport. And you got some cojones, bud. I just, you know, I'm trying to say it lightly. But, yeah, just a couple questions. You know, you were talking earlier about you've been around the sport since the new pit road speed has been implemented by NASCAR and the helmets and everything. Just to throw out there to our fans that don't know that much about pitting a car, does the does the helmet and everything, does it sort of, I'm trying to look for the word, Eric, does it sort of infringe on you doing your job?
No, not really. They've designed helmets that are specifically for pit stops, which has helped tremendously, because when we first had the helmets, they had small openings like a motorcycle helmet. It's hard to see. You didn't have good vision. Now they've opened them up where you have good vision. We practice with them every week. You know, when we're at the shop, we use them when we practice. So you just get used to them. So now if we don't have it, we kind of feel naked without it.
Yeah, good. I mean, you know, you sort of get used to it. Yeah, and one more question. I've noticed, which I've been to night races. I've been to Bristol and everything. I've noticed that at night races, y'all have little flashlights. Do they sort of clip in? Are they battery operated? Where y'all can see everything?
Yep, everybody's got their own likings for their lights, but we usually have infrared lights that go on the top of our helmets, and they're just either some of them are riveted on or some of them are Velcroed on, and then you got a little battery pack that goes on your radio belt, and you just flip a switch and it brightens it all up so you can see the lug nuts, because it does get dark down there on pit road.
10-4, and I noticed that they are LED, you know, just like you said. And one more, I had one more question, then I had one more statement. I think my mind left me. Sorry, but I can't remember what the question was, Eric. But I want to thank you a lot for coming on, taking time out of your show. And like I told Joey Gase earlier, we had Joey Gase. I know you probably know him from Jimmy Means Racing National Nationwide Series. Mine and Suzanne's next trip, I think, is going to be Atlanta. And I would love to meet you, maybe get an interview that we can put on the show and all that.
Yeah, I'd love to. That'd be awesome. Yeah, just give me a shout out and let me know, and I'll be glad to do that.
All right. We will definitely hunt you up when we go to Atlanta. I don't know if Steven and his wife's coming down or not, but I'm hoping me and Suzanne get our media stuff to Atlanta, and we'll see you Labor Day weekend, my friend.
Yeah, Atlanta's always a great night race. That's a fun race there.
Yes, sir. And, Eric, again, thank you very much for what you do for our sport. And, oh, I know what I was going to ask. Here, it just come to me. You know how rednecks are. I seen a picture of you and your daughter on Facebook on the four-wheeler. I mean, y'all've got the most beautiful daughter in the world. Just want to give y'all a big shout out. But she looks like she loves riding the four-wheeler.
Yeah,
looks like she loves riding the four-wheeler.
She's wide open. She's 2.5, and she's the pride of my joy. She's a crazy little girl. I love her to death. It's about time to start getting her into a race car.
That was my next question. You thinking about putting her in a Bandolera or maybe the Allison Legacy Series? Just throwing it out there, bud.
I'd like to. You know, my whole family's been involved in racing, so every generation that I know of, we've all been racing. My sister races. You know, my dad raced. My grandma raced. My grandpa, my aunts and uncle. So it's in the blood, so we'll probably have to try her out in Bandolera and see if she likes it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That was my question. It sort of left
Eric?
My mind because I got everything going on. Uh-oh, Suzanne's got a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I've got Donna on. Hold on 1 second. She wants to talk to
okay.
you.
Well, I guess Suzanne's going. Yeah, thanks for holding on, Eric. Donna, here's the board. She's a big fan of yours. Big fan of Joey's, and she was having problems with her computer earlier, but she definitely, I think, I'm looking at the computer. But anyway, Eric, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of fans don't, I mean, you know, now, you know, which I've come up in the sport here at Talladega since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. I used to work for Mr. Enoch Staley and everything, done some spotting here to track. We, you know, us high school kids, we used to check out of school, and we get to set up in 76 Union balls during practice and qualifying, and then, you know, during the race. But anyway, throwing that out there, I want to bring Miss Donna the board on with you, Eric. Okay, Miss Donna, you're in the pit stop with Timmy Spiney, Stephen Wilson, and Eric Wallace. You got the floor, Donna.
Hey, Tim. Hey, Steve. I had to call in and say hey to my boy, Eric.
Hey, Donna, how are you?
I'm good. I can't wait for September to see you.
I know. It's good. I'll be here before you know it.
I know. You've been doing all right and has Paisley.
Yes, ma'am. I'm doing great, and she's great. She's wide open.
Good.
We just got her into gymnastics a few weeks ago, so watching a 2.5-year-old do gymnastics is pretty funny.
Oh, great. Well, I just had to call in and say hey to you, and you know I'm always watching out for you guys, so
we appreciate
for taking time.
We appreciate what you do for the sport and for us and everything else.
Yeah, you know, love your family. All right, dear. Will you take care and see you in September?
Okay, we'll see you in Richmond.
Okay, thanks, dear. Bye-bye.
Yes, ma'am.
Bye, Tim. Bye, Stephen. Suzanne.
Okay, that was Donna. She's a big race fan. Eric. But, yeah, anyway, just thanks a lot for taking the time out of your schedule, Eric, and good luck this weekend at the Brickyard 400 Indianapolis Motor Speedway, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, I just want to say one thing. You know, it's fans like Donna that keep the sport alive, and we really appreciate all the fans that listen in to y'all and any other radio stations and watch the races. You know, it's people like that's what keep me going, so we really appreciate it. And, guys, I appreciate y'all having me on.
Yes, sir. You're welcome, Eric. Stephen?
All right.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks, bud. Don't be a stranger. We'll get you back on. He dropped. Okay. So who else we got on? Eric just dropped. That was a good conversation. Donna done real great. All right, we've got our weatherman, Stephen, and I don't know if Tim's going to talk about you getting snow or what, but let's bring Tim Campbell, our weatherman for the Speedway Digest Radio Network from Stillwater, Oklahoma, Mr. Tim Campbell.
Let's get ready to rumble!
There you go, Tim. You got an intro. How's it going, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
We're doing good. We're getting a little bit of rain. It's not as hot. Steven said it's hot as Hades up there where he's at.
Yeah, I'm going to send him some snow. Yeah, I got some snow coming his way.
Go ahead, Tim. You got the floor, bud, for the race weekend at Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the trucks tomorrow night at Eldor.
Okay, for tomorrow night, we're looking at partly cloudy, a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning, then partly sunny in the afternoon, not as warm, humid, and with highs in the upper 70s, west winds 5 to 10 miles an hour, becoming north at 10 to 15 in the afternoon, chance of rain 40%. And tomorrow night is mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy, cooler with the lows in the upper 50s, north winds at 10 to 15 miles an hour. That's for tomorrow night. And for the Indianapolis weekend forecast, on Friday night, we're looking at a partly cloudy, highs in the upper 70s, with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the mid-60s. And Saturday, we're looking at mostly cloudy, with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the lower 80s. And partly cloudy, with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the upper 60s in the evening. And Sunday is going to be partly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the lower 80s, lows in the mid-60s. Partly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers that night with thunderstorms, highs in the lower 80s and mid-60s. So it looks like it might be looks like they might be getting a chance for some showers. Hopefully it's only 50% chance. That's 50% they will and 50% they won't. Then on Sunday, we're looking at 40% chance. So hopefully they won't get too much rain and we'll still have a good race.
Yeah, I do too. And, Tim, while we got a few minutes before the top of the hour when we got Tony Bajinski and Tina Stubb with their segment, Everything Open Wheel. I know there's some bad weather going on. You want to throw anything out about where the bad weather's at right now, boy?
Yeah, we got some. We got severe thunderstorm warnings for South Dakota and Montana and Mississippi. And we got some in the Oklahoma Panhandle, and we got some in Texas and Wyoming. They're kind of strung all over. I think we got probably 15 to 18 severe thunderstorm warnings at this time. We don't have no tornado warning. We had one earlier, and it dropped off already. But as we speak, I've got about 11 people watching the storms on our Stillwater Skywarn storm team. I'm based out of Stillwater, but I have storm team members all over the United States that we work. We don't just do here. We do weather all over. And we got a mutual aid agreement with the Angry Weather Network and ASD staff. So hopefully with all three of us teams and mutual aid together, we can put us up about 35 or 40 people that we can have watching radar and dispatching and stuff. And like I always tell everybody, you know, we're not getting paid a dime for this. I tell them the only pay that I want out of this deal is be able to save somebody's life or pet or keep somebody's property safe and give them time to get out and get warmed and get sheltered. That's the only thing I want out of this.
Amen, Tim. And just to throw something out there at you, is there any relief for the big drought out west, out in California, where they got all the wildfires? Have you noticed anything going to change out there?
Well, not right off hand, there's not. It'd be nice
okay.
if they get some.
I know it.
I think they got a big wildfire out in Arizona right now, isn't it, where they got that big wildfire?
I was watching it. Yes, sir. I was watching that on Fox earlier. Stephen, you got any questions for our weatherman for the network?
Not tonight. No questions for him. Just like he keeps the snow away from me.
Well, I thought if we're bringing you some snow, it'd cool temperatures off a little bit, and that way you wouldn't have to sweat so bad.
Well, that's true, but I like my heat.
I do, too. And, Tim, I want to thank you again. We'll give you time while we're waiting on the top of the hour. If you want to talk about your websites and all that and what you got going, you got the floor for a few minutes, Tim. You go ahead.
Okay, yeah, if you want to visit my website, it's skywarnweather.weebly.com. And if there's anybody out there that would like to know the weather forecast for where they're at or anything or for the next week or the next couple of days or something, you can email me at tcampbell@weatherag.com, and if you need any weather forecast, I'll try to help you out within what I can. And like I say, we're just trying to keep these three teams going and trying to get out here and keep people safe and get all the warnings out. And that's just about what we're doing.
All right. Tim, I want to thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule to help us out on our little radio show. And I know Stephen appreciates it. I do, too. And Suzanne does, too. But thanks again, Tim. Tell Ms. Campbell we said hello, and y'all have a good, safe evening, bud. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome, bud. Okay, that was our weatherman, Mr. Tim Campbell. And now we want to bring – uh-oh. Stephen, you ain't going to believe he's done popped in here. I'm not going to do what I do. I'm going to play this, and this is Tony B. He is the Indianapolis 500 champion crew member. Won the Indy 500 with Dario Franchitti in 2012. Let's bring Tony B on with a big salute. Come on in here, Tony B.
Let's get ready to rumble.
folks. How are we?
I'm doing great. Tony, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. A lot of stuff going on, a lot of good racing stuff, and hopefully Tim will push that rain out of Indianapolis for the race because it is forecast for rain.
I know it. And, Tony, while we've got me, you, and Steven on, you know, you said I could actually wear that Indianapolis 500 championship ring. You going to let Steven wear it, or has Steven just got to touch it and that's it? Come on, Steven, get him, man.
I'll put it to you this way. If he would kindly quit beating me so bad in fantasy racing, maybe I'd let him wear it.
I can't make any promises on that now.
I'm not doing very good for the team, but it is what it is. And Tim, if you tell me to let Mr. Wilson and Mrs. Wilson wear those two championship rings, by gosh, that's what I'll do.
Well, I'm not going to tell you, Tony. I'm going to ask you because I think we're all family. The radio network's doing real great, and I consider us all family. And if that's okay, they can wear them.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. look forward to seeing pictures of it and doing it. It's very entertaining.
Good. Now you're talking about that about the second ring, Tony. You've got a second ring from the Rolex 24 at Daytona, correct?
No. The second ring is for the same year that Dario won the race. We won the Izod IndyCar Pit Stop Championship.
Oh, okay. My bad.
So,
and Tony,
yeah.
Steven, do you have any comments? We've got Tina Stowe coming on. We're going to let them do their episode, Everything Open Wheel, with Tony with the Indy and Tina with the NHRA. You have anything else for Tony right quick?
No, I really don't have much for Tony tonight, although I will say don't feel bad, Tony. I'm not doing so well either. I've lost a couple points there in the fantasy racing, and I think I'm about fourth now in the season championships. I was up front, but I don't have any wins yet in this segment, so don't feel bad.
Well, it's been great, and it's very fun, and adds to the benevolency that we have with our show, and you guys are just great people, and I enjoy doing that with you folks, and I'm looking at you from sixth place, so I dropped all the way from third.
Okay, Tony. And Steven, I'm gonna bring Tina on, and me and Tina talked yesterday. We're gonna let them do, you know, just like you said, we're gonna let them do it like they want it, and Tina has a guest, and I'm gonna put myself mute, Steven. Do you want me to mute you and while we take a break and let them handle it?
Yeah, that's fine. You can put me off and mute, and I'll let them have their time.
Okay, that's what I'm gonna do too. I'm gonna mute myself and I'll mute you. But I want you to hear this. We're going to bring Miss NHRA, Miss Sweet Tina Stull, into the pit stop with Tim Despain and Steven Wilson and Tony B.
Let's get ready to rumble!
There you go, Tina. Me and Steven are going to step aside. I have to take a pit stop. Y'all can handle it for here, and I'll come back in just a few minutes and listen in. But Steven said, y'all do whatever y'all got to do, sweetie. Y'all have fun.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Hey, Tony, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very good, Mrs. NHRA. How are you?
That cracks me up. Well, hey, I'm excited. Tonight we're going to have John Bandemir III. Everybody calls him Sporty. That's what he's known as. This is the Bandemir family that owns the track out in Golden. And anybody who watched NHRA racing this weekend, that is the track we're going to be talking about. Really glad to get him on. I can't even imagine how he's still standing after a national event flies through one of these tracks.
Right.
The amount of, you know, wreckage that must be left behind. I bet they all probably want to take a nice long vacation, but as racing goes, there's always another weekend. But I'm not quite sure when he'll call in, probably pretty soon, but we'll talk a little bit about that. This is an interesting track, and I'm sure you have some technical questions for him because this is one of the highest engineered tracks that I know of, and maybe, I hope I'm using the word right, they have done an incredible thing. It's 5,800 feet of altitude, which just really puts a lot of stress on those engines, and it takes
right.
I believe I heard a statistic they were saying loses about 25% power in some of these naturally aspirated engines. And one of the problems is that, you know, that track gets really hot and greasy, and with the loss of power, I mean, it's been a difficult place to race. I know for myself, I've raced it quite a few times, love the track, but we do a lot of tinkering, a lot of changing up of things on the car just so that we can get down the track there. And what they've done is they've actually put a cooling system underneath the concrete. And it kind of makes you wonder, who thought of that, and why haven't they been that? And you know, why haven't they been doing that for a long time? And the other side of that coin is, I'm kind of interested to find out how many people looked at them and said, "You're crazy. I can't believe you're going to do that. That doesn't, you know," because that's really something out of the box from most tracks. So I'll be excited to hear a little bit about how that came about and that. But they had some just fantastic racing, some of the fastest speeds we've ever seen in Denver. And just a great event. I know it was packed from my friends that were there. Just that they had an awesome time. It was a great event. But you know, we'll hear a little bit about that. Once he calls in, tell me a little bit about what's been going on in open wheel racing this week.
Well, in open wheel racing, if you don't like Nico Rosberg, you got a problem in Formula One, because that man is on fire. And I've been studying the points, and the only person that really has a shot at beating him out of the championship title is Lewis Hamilton, which is his Mercedes teammate. And Nico went to the Grand Prix of Germany and won in his home country.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's very, very cool for Nico. But he is doing very, very well and taking him and Lewis Hamilton both are taking Formula One by storm. And
mm-hmm.
there really isn't anybody that has anything for them. And we can step over to the Verizon IndyCar Series.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite interesting up at Toronto. They had a double race. The first race was rained out.
Mm-hmm.
They had some really, really bad rain, and the cars just couldn't run in the puddles. Even on the wet tires, it wasn't doable. So they ran both races on Sunday. And in the first race, Sebastian Bourdais was able to get a win with Helio Castroneves and Tony Kanaan in third. And then the we come to race two same day and get another new winner IndyCar this year, Mike Conway. And Tony Kanaan finished second, and Willpower third. And it just really, when you look at the championship there, Kanaan is moving up in the standings, but he's far enough behind. I don't feel like he'll challenge for the championship. But I will tell you this, Elio Castroneves is leading and out front, and I believe in him more than anybody else. And so look for Elio to be really running hard. And their next race stop is the Honda Indy 200 at Mid-Ohio. So another road course coming up. But things are going well in both those divisions.
Well, hey, I got some good news. Sporty's on the phone. So we're ready to go ahead and bring him on and talk a little bit about that. And then, Tim, go ahead and send him on my way. This is Sporty Bandemir from Golden, Colorado.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hello, Sporty. Thank you very, very much for joining us this evening.
You're welcome. How are you tonight?
I am doing great. I am absolutely ecstatic that you could come. I almost didn't even want to ask you, thinking, you know, you just came off of that national, and I can imagine you probably haven't slept for about a week. But
you know what? You're fine. You know, I think during that week you just kind of you run on a little bit of adrenaline, but you know what? Life doesn't stop. You got to go right back into another week of events, so you're fine.
This is true. This is like, to me, when the national event happens, man, it's like a week of Christmas.
You're exactly right. In fact, I always say that it is like Christmas from the standpoint that you know it's coming. You're working so hard. You've got all the last minute details that always get you a little stressed out, and then you kind of open your home to your friends and family for a big party, and then you send them all home.
Well, I tell you, this year was a little different for me. I think I kind of cried a few tears. I'm not used to Denver is absolutely one of my favorite tracks. You know, I've been up there a bunch of times, and this year I had to just sit it out. You know, economics, people want me to work at my job, that kind of stuff, and had to and it just killed me. Truly, one of the most beautiful tracks in the country. Definitely the most unique. And then I'm having to sit home and hear about all these upgrades that you have done with the cooling system and you know, this amazing, I want to say, Star Trek-level engineering that's going on. And I'm missing out, so I'll definitely make sure I'm there next year because I couldn't bear a third year in a row. So,
I appreciate that.
Well, that was kind of one of the real things that, you know, I just had you know, first of all, I already did kind of explain a little bit about what y'all have done, but what I'm talking about is they have put a cooling system under the first, I'd say, 300 feet. I guess last year it was just the first 100 feet, and then you did an additional 200 feet to help provide a better racing surface so that when that track heats up and gets greasy, we're not having to deal with the problem of loss of power because of the lack of oxygen. You know, now that with the track staying good, you know, it really gives these teams a real opportunity to do things they've never been able to do at that track again. And my first question is, when you guys decided to do this, did everybody think you were geniuses or did they think you were crazy?
You know what? I think it was one of those deals that everybody went, it sounds like a good idea, but we'll kind of believe it when we see it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody wanted to be too excited, and yet I don't think they wanted to be too negative about it. You know, as you just stated, you know, we're at a disadvantage because of our altitude and the lack of oxygen. So anything that we can do to help these teams compensate for that is definitely going to help them out. And because of our race season being during the summer when it's hot, the national event is usually extremely hot here in Colorado. If we can cool down those track temperatures by about 25 degrees, it really does help these teams out a considerable amount. So here a few years ago, we put the cooling system in, and it worked great. It did everything that we expected it to do or had hoped that it would do. And but, you know, as everything, things change. You know, the way mm-hmm. that they tune cars and the different points on the racetrack where they're in different one-to-one ratios and different things like that, all of that changes. And it just so happened to be that this year there was one section of the racetrack that we really needed to pull out and put some better drainage under it. Once we, mm-hmm. we got working on that, we realized that the section that we were pulling out was right where the cooling system ended. And so it really made sense to go ahead and, while we had everything torn up, go ahead and put in additional cooling to take us all the way out to the 330-foot mark.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in our particular case, because the tanks that hold the coolant are buried underground, there's times during the year where you really don't need to run it through a chiller. The ground temperature is cool enough that just by recirculating that, you know, you can keep that temperature pretty consistent and keep it at a level that you want it. Once
mm-hmm.
it gets to July and August, a little different story. Then you really do need to have that chiller taking that coolant and bringing it down in temperature. So we got it all done just right prior to last week's Mile High Nationals, and it worked amazing. In fact, in the professional categories, all four of the Pro Stock Bike, Top Fuel, and Funny Car, we broke 7 of the 8 records in those categories over the weekend. So pretty amazing and just put on a really good side-by-side performance show all 3 days. So
yeah, well, you know, you guys set yourself up to literally be heroes or zeros, as the saying goes. And
exactly
you guys came out as heroes because that, you know, that is, it's very frustrating as a driver, you know, and it's not just to go to Denver, but to go to any race far from home and have to, you know, do extra to just try to perform and then to just not be able to pull it off. It's just absolutely frustrating. You know, one of the things, though, people may not realize is that, this definitely Denver's harder to race. It's harder because it's different from everything else. But as my grandma used to say, it's unfair for everyone, so it's fair again. You know, I mean, all
That's
the
right.
racers, the only thing that when I raced up there that I hated to see was if I pulled into those staging lanes, see the local racer pull up next to me. Because I knew he knew this track inside and out, man, and the rest of us were lost. But, there's always been great racing. And it's like, you know, with the – and this is where I just think you guys are an incredible example of what a track could be. We hear a lot of, you know, moaning, complaining from, you know, tracks that they – how are they going to do this? We can't get – you know, nobody will come. We can't get people in the seats. Every time I've been – and I've been to more than just NHRA events at your track, they are packed. You guys know how to get people to the events, and it's mainly because they're always a top-notch event, whether it's for 4th of July, fireworks or a smaller drag race or the big races. People come and when they're leaving at the end of the day, they feel like they had the full experience. And to be honest, that's true from a racing standpoint. I love lots of tracks, but I can't say that's true at every track that when I rolled out on Sunday, felt like I got a weekend's worth.
Well, we appreciate that, and you know, as you know, we're a family business, and my brother-in-law and my sisters and my wife and mom and dad and nieces and nephews and kids are all involved in some way, shape, or form, and I think there's a couple things that I think that are really important to remember is that. The racer, the sportsman racer, is really the backbone of what we do. And so, you know, it's really our job to take care of them and to put on fun programs and things that they can be involved in and that are exciting year after year. From a spectator standpoint, same thing. You know, we've got to be able to put on good quality, fun events. And when you talk about the cooling system, for example, you know, that's something that helps the performance of the cars. It helps the crew chiefs. It helps the drivers. But, you know, ultimately, it puts on a good show for the spectators. You know, spectators come out, they spend money, and they want to see cars go fast, and they want to see mm-hmm. them go side by side. And so as much as that cooling system in particular maybe looks like it's geared to the participant, it's really geared to the spectator just as much from the standpoint of really trying to be able to put on really good performances and shows that give people their money's worth.
Well, and
it sounds to me as if it levels the playing field.
You know, when we look at, you know, there's so many levels of competition. Obviously, a super comp dragster is a different level than a top fuel dragster. But the issue is that a top fuel dragster, 10,000 horsepower is a lot of horsepower to get to the racetrack. So the real key is can you get it to the racetrack? Will the racetrack hold it? And will you be
exactly.
able to achieve the performance that you want and that you expect? You know, if you're driving a super comp car, a lot of times people don't understand how important 60 foot, 330 times, all those things are to whether or not a competitor wins or loses. And they depend on consistency. That's the name of the game for them is consistency. So, you know, regardless of how much horsepower, how little horsepower, and what type of category you race in, you know, timing systems and track prep and all those conditions are just hugely important from the standpoint. You want to lose because you lost, you beat yourself, you made a mistake, not mm-hmm. because the racetrack beat you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. I can say here on that, yeah. those ugly things, you know, it's always been, you know, people don't realize it, like what an invisible bump
where yeah.
those little things, you know, all those little things, man, especially in the sportsman where we're it's not just a matter of getting down there and being ahead of the other guy, but we're basically racing ourselves. And,
right.
you know, one little skip or one little spin or, you know, or something, and our times go out the window. You know, a tenth of a second in the 60-foot, you might as well just give the other guy the trophy and go home.
Because we can't fix it. You're right. I mean, we had races, both in the professional ranks and in the sportsman ranks, that were decided by 2/1000ths of a second, 3/1000ths
mm-hmm.
of a second. You know, I mean, it's crazy. We had one race that was .0001, you know. So, I mean,
wow.
You know, a margin of victories like that, yeah.
I've lost by 1/10,000.
Yeah.
You know,
isn't that crazy?
It hurts. It hurts a lot. But at least, you know, you also say I was that close to winning, you know, but it is. It's, you know, being able to have that you know, have it where you at least feel it's fair, you know, that something out of your control is, you know, you just can't go up against it. So
sometimes when you do your best and your best just isn't good enough. I mean,
yeah.
you know, I mean, you cut an 0-10 reaction time and run your number with a 2 and the guy in the other lane, you know, has a 0-08 reaction and runs the number with a 1 and you just go, wow. And as a competitor, you just go, it wasn't my day.
And it's a very, very long drive home.
Yeah.
that 1,200-mile drive home thinking about, you know, just a couple of thousandths. It's quite a long – you beat yourself up a bit. You have to learn how to forgive yourself for being human.
The hardest part is when you look at the round sheet and you realize that your package would be any other competitor
yeah.
in that particular round, and that makes it hurt even more.
You can't handle the truth.
Well, you know what? There, one of the other things I know that you've done, and this is obviously something really for the spectators because we pretty much can see it, you know, as long as you is that you've done the whole lighting system. You've really put a lot more lighting in than most tracks, and And I don't know how you provided the spectacular view. If you're not familiar with this track, these guys, you know, they couldn't just go find a flat spot of land. They decided they're going to build this puppy into the side of a mountain. And,
yeah.
You know, so it's kind of a one, all the seats are on the one side, which is great because you don't have to stare into the sun the whole day. But, you know, you look out over the beautiful mountains, and I can imagine the echo factor must go for, you know, a couple, quite a distance, but.
Well, it's a different perspective. You know, my grandfather was going to build the racetrack a little bit farther north from where it currently is today, and things just didn't work out. He some farmers in that area weren't real happy with the thought of having a racetrack next to their farms, and so the county commissioners helped him find the piece of property that we're at. And yeah, who would have thought, you know, being on the side of a mountain? But again, I think from a spectator standpoint, sometimes the things we don't realize is how much the cars move around, and it just gives you a different perspective. If you're always on flat ground looking straight across, that's the view you get. You watch them go by. That's still exciting and still fun, but it's fun to have that perspective of being able to look more down on the cars, see a little bit more of how much these cars really have to be driven, and just give you a little bit different perspective.
Oh, it's amazing. I'll tell you, for all, you know, everybody's got an excuse why they could do stuff different. It's like, you know, here's Bandermeyer could easily say, well, you know, shoot, we're on the side of a mountain. We just don't have pit space. I've never had a problem pit spacing there. I mean, it's the best pits that you get offered. You know, it's, and every seat is a great, literally a great view. It's, you know, I love the fact that you got your, you know, slight incline on the shutdown so you don't have to destroy your brakes. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
It's just a feat of engineering and you know, an incredible place to go. You know,
in the past, I've
tried to always swing it, so we did the divisional race, and I could hang out for a couple of weeks and then hit that national. But just to be there. But it's a little tricky. I think you guys have a little bit tricky with that afternoon showers that have a tendency to pop up.
Well, Mother Nature can be a little challenging, you know. I mean, in fact, I had a guy say, now, you guys are 5,800 feet. And I said, you are correct. We are 5,800 feet. We're a mile high. But you have to remember, with the corrected altitude, even during the nationals, we were, in most cases, 9,700, you know, even 10,000 feet. And the guy kind of looked at me like, you got to be kidding me. And I go, no, that's pretty real. So,
yeah,
you know, that,
I learned that.
That's the difficult part. It's not just your car that has a tough time breathing. It's, you know, go run a set of stairs and you realize how difficult it really is.
I was going to say, the first year that I came, I didn't have a pit bike. And after walking,
trouble.
You know, you're huffing it a quarter mile and, you know, and that hit in your lungs, man. It you know, these poor people that are coming off of sea level like me, and, you know, I think I lost about 8 pounds in a matter of about a week up there, but it is. But, you know, like you see, the nice thing is it's the same for everybody, so it's definitely a challenge. But the rewards
it is,
are,
and they figure it out. You know, I mean, these men and women that are in our sport, they're so smart, and, you know, they're always working to try to figure out new things and new technology, and it's just amazing to me how well they compensate for, you know, the disadvantages that we really have.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, it's you won't find a group of people who can fix it on the fly and find creative ways of dealing
MacGyvers,
with this
you
stuff.
Know?
Yeah, absolutely, MacGyvers. I have a, you know, huge amount of faith in my crew chiefs that have gotten me through, you know, whether it's high, low. You know, sometimes it's not even, at least at Denver, you expect it, and you're kind of ready for it. You get,
exactly.
You know, we've had some of those real bad, you know, think you're going to be at, you know, a couple hundred feet, and it hits you at 5,000 overnight. I mean, we went to one and had snow one morning, and trust us, none of us were prepared for snow. So
no.
It's incredible.
It can throw a lot of different curveballs at you all in a short period of time.
Now, you are going to continue throughout the summer. You continue. Do you have a street program that you do? I know that in the – or do you have other events that come in?
We do. You know, our season really runs from April through October, and we race 4 to 5 nights or days a week. Our Wednesday nights, the Colorado State Patrol sponsors what we call responsible speed. So every Wednesday night, we have a test and tune night from 4 to 9, where people can, whether it's a street car, a race car, a sports car, daily driver, really doesn't matter. It gives them the opportunity to come and just play. There's no classes or brackets. They don't have to worry about dial-ins or reaction times. They just come and have fun. And they a lot of them learn to become racers from that. Mm-hmm. And others just enjoy themselves and have fun just coming out on Wednesday nights and having a good time. We get
Doesn't like to show off their car? You know, we're all proud of our vehicles. Get it down there and that.
Especially so many kids today, you know, just looking for a place to go to have fun and to be able to enjoy their automobile, not get in trouble. In fact, we usually have anywhere from 5 to 10 police officers that come out on those nights and race with the kids and have fun with them. And it's just a fun experience for them, an educational experience for them at the same time. And so we do those almost every Wednesday night. There's just a few of them during the summer that we don't.
Yeah. Well, I looked on the website, and so if anybody's interested, definitely go to Band. It's bandamere.com, correct?
Correct. Very simple.
Okay. Bandamere, and it really shows that unless you have a really souped-up car, you don't need anything special. I think it's a 13, you know, under 14 seconds you might need some specialty equipment, but it's very minimal, and it's really just what practically you should be wearing if you're going to try to go that fast because you're pushing your car. But it's come down. I wish I had done something like this. You know, I was like in my 30s the first time I ever sat in a race car. So I started way late. If I had known that, you know, it's entry fees, you know, what, $20 or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really expensive.
To be able to provide it and let somebody say, go speed as fast as you can, just make sure you brake at the other end, and, you know, to be able to do that, and I would have loved that, to be able to also be around and hook up with other people who love the cars and love the stuff that you do, that's a godsend. I hope that our military is taking advantage of that, because I know a lot of times we're losing a lot of our military due to, like, you know, out there drag racing and, you know, going for that adrenaline
yes.
You know, not on a safe track. And, you know, there's no such thing as a street, in my term, there's no such thing as a street outlaw. There's just somebody breaking the law. It's not drag racing if it's on the streets.
You're exactly right. And I think what happens a lot of times is they feel a little intimidated. They feel like, well, maybe my car won't pass inspection, or I'll look dumb because I don't know what I'm doing. And that's the farthest thing from it. I mean, the reality of it is, it's simple. We're there to help them. We want to help. We want them to have a good time. And so, I mean, any question is not a dumb question. And at the same time, they really, truly then get to find out what their car will do in a quarter mile, what the performance is, gives them some baselines to be able to make some adjustments and do some fun things to it. And again, fast or slow really doesn't matter. It's all about just having a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the thing is, you expect, you know, that was the thing I had to learn because I didn't come from a racing background. I just wanted to do it, is that, you know, you're not born knowing any of this stuff. With a track like yours, they know, and they expect people not to know, and that's why you guys are there, is to show them.
That's
because
right.
Obviously you want them to come back. And so,
absolutely.
And I tell you, I would have gotten a lot farther, a lot faster if I had done something like that, because you can pick up hints. You got these guys that are out there every week. They're good at this. Your local, you know, don't be thinking that John Forrest can impart some wisdom on you. That the kid that's the bracket champion of that track probably has more wisdom on the kind of racing you want to do. And I've always found racers are, you know, they're pretty good about sharing their information, helping it. Nobody likes to see somebody struggle. Now, when you're behind them by 2 points, they may not be wanting to help you out no more. But if you're just
true.
New into this, you know, they're definitely.
You're right, and you know, you were talking about the fact that you really didn't get into a race car until you were in your 30s, and I watch. We have a really strong junior and youth program. And I've had the opportunity to watch so many of these young kids that started in that junior program and then move their way up through into Super Comp, Super Gas, Super Street, you know, a variety of different categories. In fact, at the Mile High Nationals in Top Dragster, a young kid, 19 years old, Brandon Rhodes, won the class, and he came out of our junior program. Bradley Johnson made it to the final round in Super Gas, came out of the junior program. So you're exactly right. You know, the more sea time, and of course these young kids are young minds, they seem to grab a hold of this really quick and they
don't realize how
it.
Dangerous it is yet.
You know what? I love it though. I love it from the standpoint that every once in a while I get a chance to race, and I love racing those kids because I realize I have to be on my game. I mean, it makes me a better racer racing against them because I know they're good, and I know I better be on my game on both ends of the track. And yet I love it. I mean, they're so much fun.
Yeah.
And they
don't overthink it. You know, they've been bugging me, asking me, you know, what I want to call my segment. And I finally said, you know, I'm thinking of calling it the staging lanes. And mainly
there
because the staging lanes is where you take everything that you think you know and question it. Because, you know, you could do everything back in the pit. You set up your tires. You set up the fuel. You got this. All of that, sorry about that, I don't know where that came from, but all of that going, but you wait long enough in the staging lanes for your turn, and by the time you get up to that light, you're going to be sure that you should have changed everything. I think that's where the kids have it. They don't doubt it. They go up there. They know their car is ready. They get in there, let go of the button, go to the other end of the track, and turn, you know, it's just, they just don't overthink it. But, boy, do they have fun. And, you know, and it's great. You make friends and get to watch your friends, you know, race and all that. So, well, you know what, there's a is there anything that we got, you know, coming up or any more additional changes? I mean, are you guys – you know, biting at the chop to chill the entire, you know, maybe get some cooling system underneath the stands so that the you can refrigerate your.
Yeah, you know, I think the fans would definitely enjoy that, especially this time of the year. No kidding. But, no, you know, I tell you what, you know, we spent a lot of time this winter grinding and polishing the track, putting the cooling system in, putting additional lighting in the shutdown area. This year we did some creature comforts for the spectators with some pavilion areas and some picnic tables and things for them. And, you know, again, just, you know, each year just trying to find little ways that we can make it better for all of our customers, whether they are participant or a spectator. And we've got such a great sport. You know, our sport has two sides to it. There's one that's spectator-driven and one that's participant-driven. And there's many, many events that we have that we call, you know, participant-driven events. They're events that you really want to come and participate. You really don't want to come and watch. I mean, it's more of a hands-on, get behind the wheel, have fun, whether it's your street car, a race car, whatever it is. And then there's those events that are spectator-driven where you're going to sit in the stands and be entertained by a lot of really cool, high-horsepower vehicles. And so always just trying to make that to where that experience can be the best that it can possibly be on either side.
Well, I agree with you. I think, you know, you guys obviously know what you're doing because, you know, your track is, you know, you got the people there, you got the racers there. You never hear, you know, negative things. And, you know, we all like to kind of gripe, especially when we lose. And you just don't hear that coming out of, you know, it's always the car, you know. But it, you know, really appreciate it. I hope that, you know, hey, please keep me, you know, informed. If you got something coming up, let me know about it. Love to, you know, get people out there.
Well, thank you.
And that, great, I have to just say again, great job. Just a, it was a fantastic event. I know there's at least four guys who are really happy with their new Wallys. You know,
yeah.
It's one of the, as I always say, one of the, these days that's going to be me, but, you know,
I'm with you there.
It was awesome. I appreciate you taking the time. All I can think is please go home, get some sleep. You guys must be exhausted.
I sure appreciate it. No, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
And is there anything else that you want to plug? I know that you're on Twitter. They're at you know what?
We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Our website. We just redid our website. It's only been up for about a month now, with the new site. If spectators, racers, anybody goes to our site, bandmirror.com. Very simple. It'll
list
out all of the information. You can kind of follow race results and points, as well as, of course, just being brought up to date with all the upcoming events. We've got a lot of stuff, whether it's truck events, Volkswagen events, Super Chevy. We're hosting the Division 5 ET Finals this year in September. So just a lot of fun stuff still going on the remainder of the season. And you should be able to get just about everything you need from the website.
Well, excellent. Thank you again, Tony. Do you have any last-minute questions or anything that you think I missed?
No, I think you did a wonderful job. Sporty, it's very nice to be introduced to you, and sounds like you're doing a fantastic job, and congratulations, and keep it up, brother.
Hey, thank you so much.
Okay. Well, Tony, do you have anything to well, then we'll say goodbye to Sporty, and then, Tony, I don't know if I kind of cut you off earlier or if you had...
No, not at all.
I
pretty much covered everything that needed to be covered, and... you know, NASCAR is going to be in Indianapolis, and so that's going to be a good time. And
well, I was going to ask you, here, listening to that a little bit about, you know, doing cooling systems under the tracks and all that. In drag racing, it's so, you know, traction is so, you know, I mean, you got 4 seconds. If you lose traction, you're done. Do you think that they would ever introduce something like that in, like, open wheel racing, or can you see that going to another sport? Does it, is there an inherent problem? Or, I mean, I think it seems so obvious that, wow, what a great idea, and yet it hadn't been done up till now. And now that we know it actually works, do you think there's crossover on that?
Well, all I know is the Bristol Motor Speedway. They reconfigured and redid the track. NASCAR came in, ran on it, and said, we don't like it. And they tore it out and redone it again. And that would be a facility that, in my opinion, could probably use not cooling, but heat.
Yeah.
Put heat in the track. And it would, you know, things
especially
like
tracks
that
maybe get shadowed, you know, where they know that a certain time of day this part always ends up in the shadow and gets cold or whatever. I mean.
But, you know, like I said with Sporty, it levels the playing field. Everybody's on the same field. And if they chose to do that in any form of motorsports, everybody would have engineers and specialists on those items, and that is how you know that they would come up. And the bottom line is exactly what Sporty said. It's for the fan.
Yeah,
it makes the competition more close.
Well, it, you know, it's kind of like I'm not even so much from the standpoint of, like, how do we be able to provide the perfect track for each race, but more when we have tracks like Denver, where it's, we know every year we're going to have the same issue. Every year it's going to be the same. You know, some of these tracks have inherent problems, you know, just by where they are, where they're located, what the weather usually is like. And to be able to, you know, provide where, you know, you have a, you know, you have a track where every year the back half gets screwed up because the sun sets and then the track cools down or whatever. But just to make it where the track is raceable.
Right.
Because there's nothing worse than, you know, you have, a, you know, 100,000 people come watch a race and you have to, you know, you can't race it or the you know, you start to have it get to a point where it's dangerous because, you know, the conditions are making the track unraceable or, you know, it's
you
can see to be too cold.
Is, put a system in and just using Bristol as a something to theorize about, but if you could imagine them racing two and three abreast around Bristol Motor Speedway because the cars would hold on, and the more grooves, the better a racetrack is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that would be wonderful addition to all forms of racing. I mean, you know, you know, they work so hard on dirt tracks to get them tacky and where, you know, so why can't they do something to make the asphalt speedways the same way?
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, it's obviously there's probably a huge cost prohibitive in that, but when you're talking as much money, and, you know, and to, you know, I got to say the one nice thing is, you know, drag racing, we're talking 300 feet, you know. That's a little bit different, you know, if you're talking having to do, you know, a whole corner or, you know, you're probably talking a lot more than 300 feet worth of track to make a difference.
Right.
But it's
absolutely.
Just kind of, you know, I am just absolutely amazed at what, you know, you think this is, it's not practical, they could never do it. And then you see somebody do it and you think, oh, well, if we had known, you know, we would have all been doing that. But,
right.
You know, it's I just hate when you get someplace and you can't race because you got, you know, for us, you know, we always are, apparently wherever NHRA races, the rain clouds follow us because we're always, it
right.
seems like, fighting the rain. And there are several tracks that are about sea level, and no joke, if we get high tide and rain at the same time, we have
uh-huh.
we have water coming up out of the track. It's getting pushed through the bottom of the track. So it's not even a matter of drying the track off. You dry the track off and you got like practically, you know, little water fountains coming
yeah,
up
yeah,
through
yeah,
the
weepers.
And
yep.
you know, and you,
hey,
you can spend
Tina,
yes.
Tina, Tony. I
yes.
hate to
yes.
jump in because I know y'all on the road. I've got a good friend of mine, Mr. Stephen Conley. He wants to come on and I'm gonna bring him on with us. Let's welcome Mr. Stephen Conley into the pit stop. With Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson, Tony Baczynski, and Tina Stowe.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Well, I can officially
Stephen,
say
how
that's
you
the
doing
first time
tonight,
I've been
friend?
I'm doing great. Oh, I was going to say that's the first time I've been ever come into to that introduction. That's kind of nice. Kind of like it.
Well, thanks, bud. You're in the pit stop with which Steven's done dropped. Steven's got all kind of stuff he's got going on. But you're in the pit stop with Timmy Spain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. My good friend, Mr. Tony B, and my good friend, Miss Tina Stull. But, Stephen, you got the floor, whatever you want to talk about. We've got about 15 minutes left.
You know, I called, and I figured we'd talk a little bit about Eldora. I'm getting ready to head the racetrack first thing in the morning, go up and watch some trucks on the dirt.
Camping World Truck Series. Tony Stewart, yeah. Come on, baby.
Lots going to be going on there. That's going to be a crazy busy day. So, trucks get on the track at 10 o'clock in the morning and then go until, I think, we'll probably take the checkered flag about 10:30, 11 o'clock tomorrow night. So a full day of that. But, Tina and Tony, something that you guys were just talking about, it kind of caught my attention, and you were talking about that cooling system that Bandimere has out there at their drag strip out there in Denver, and you mentioned about putting the kind of crossover for that, and I watched that race this weekend, and I was thinking about that same exact thing. Could something like that work? And very limited knowledge that I have about drag racing, but it would seem like the forces that are put on that flat surface, perfectly straight, that you're going to have on a drag strip, compared to what you would have to put into the banking, the systems laying up under that track, I'm not 100% sure that that would work on any other track other than a drag strip. I just think that the pressure that you're going to get from 400, 500 miles of the constant pounding of 3,400-pound stock cars versus what you guys put down in drag racing over that amount of time might actually wear a system out faster than what you're going to get over a weekend or however many races they might run out there at Vandermeer.
You know, that's a good point. And one of the thoughts I have is, you know, you're talking about, you know, basically cooling that concrete down as a whole, and you're talking two, we got grooves. You guys get to drive all over the track.
Right.
And so we're talking two grooves down, and I really don't know how they have that cooling system actually laid out. I haven't looked at the schematics or anything, but we're probably talking a much smaller, less significant area than, you know, if you're talking going across. I don't know how wide you guys' are, but, you know, our groove is about 10 foot wide. They probably cool wider than that, and then 300 feet might not be practical so much, except that we're only limited by what we think we can do, and that's kind of where I had asked him, Sporty, did everybody think you were a genius or were you nuts? You know, because, you know, if you know, what's going to be possible 30 years from now wouldn't be possible, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, and then on our side of the sport, I mean, we have people like Bruton Smith and promoters like Eddie Gossage down at Texas that, I mean, are definitely people that would think outside of the box, and mm-hmm. God knows
oh,
they
absolutely.
Have no problem trying it. Yeah, they would absolutely be willing to try it if it even crossed their minds. But that is just kind of something while I was sitting here listening to you guys talk that kind of crossed my mind.
Well, I didn't think of the wear and tear because I, you know, have no idea how much. I just know that, like, you know, when something for us hits the shadows, you know, we have,
yeah.
You know, we have some tracks. Our biggest problem is, you know, got crosswind, and wherever the stands end, guess what? You
yeah.
get hit with, you know, it's all, everything's going down the track. You're feeling all good and happy, and then you hit the end of the stands, and you get hit smacked on the side with a 30 mile an hour crosswind, and you think that talk about something simple to solve is, you know, give us a wind barrier, and that doesn't get done. So that's, you know, kind of look and think it's amazing that somebody thought this through, but it's.
The technology that runs, I mean, it's a bunch of race cars, and you would think that you send them down the track or you send them in a circle. But no matter whether it's IndyCar, whether it's NHRA, whether it's winged sprint cars or stock cars that we're going to see this weekend at Indianapolis, there's so much technology involved. And it takes a lot of smart people, and all the sports definitely have that for sure.
Well, and part of it is, too, that's what makes a good driver. A good drive, if you know, I mean, I'm sure in your sport, you know, if everybody had a perfect track that was easy to drive, we probably wouldn't be as interesting of a sport. And
that's
where you really see, it's like I've said a million times, driving a race, you know, driving a dragster is easy if everything goes right.
Right.
It's when, you know, it's when something goes unexpected or doesn't go right or the groove, you know, throws you out of the groove. That's when you find out who the good drivers are, because that's when you find out the experience cuts in, and they know how to do it. I'm sure with a, you know, if everybody got to drive a, you know, NASCAR track alone with, you know, nobody else in their way, they can cut down some really good times. It's when you throw all those other people in there and little adverse conditions, you really start to find out, you know, that's when the cream starts to come up and settle out at the top of the crop.
That's right. And I mean, it goes all around. And, I mean, when you talk about good drivers and who's going to be able to, I mean, handling the less-than-perfect race car, and, I mean, mentioned this when we first come on, I mean, tomorrow night is one. I mean, if you ask race fans, anybody that's going to be watching a stock car from the time they rolled out in Daytona, everybody was talking about this one race coming up tomorrow night at Eldora.
Mm-hmm.
You put vehicles that are not meant to be on this type of surface on a dirt surface, and with the forecast, I mean, and that, there goes that again. We have weather that's going to be taking part in that race tomorrow. Get a little rain. The track surfaces are going to be constantly changing. And we've got guys coming out tomorrow night, and I know, Tim, you've looked at the entry list and looked at the people that are going to be in this. We've got 31 drivers that are going to be taking part in the Mud Summer Classic tomorrow night, and over half of them have never seen a dirt surface.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you have...
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, tell me this is
going
to be televised, because that's going to be something worth watching.
Everything. But I've not hit on everything, but just, you know, thanks, Stephen. Kenny Schrader, I mean, you know, he's going to be there. But you got my good friend Michael Afferano, owner. He is owner. David McClure's crew chief. He's the one and done Chevy. Then you got Michael Annette that's coming up, which Kyle Larson, you know, they're not regulars. But, yeah, it's going to be very interesting tomorrow night, Steve. It's going to be really great. I love watching the trucks on dirt.
Now,
I mean,
Steve, what would be the worst condition you guys are going to meet up with? I mean, like, what is the bane of your existence when you go in there as a driver and, you know, and wanting to perform the best? What is the thing that gets thrown in your path that probably is the most difficult to deal with?
Well, I mean, for tomorrow night for a dirt race? Well, I think for tomorrow night, the guys, the thing that they're going to be looking at tomorrow is when they first roll in there, they're going to have the track pretty smoothed out. They're going to have all the grooves and the ruts taken out from late model races that were run today. But as we go along, and the schedule has changed for this race from their inaugural event last year, they have 6 rounds of qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
10 lap qualifying races to basically split up this field. And so, I mean, all tomorrow afternoon, these trucks are going to be on there. They're going to be digging through this dirt. They're going to be cutting the grooves, and then they immediately go into the race. So every time there's a vehicle on this track is going to be changing. So the crew chief's problem tomorrow is going to be finding a setup as it's going to be trying to get the drivers comfortable running not only through but around those ruts that are going to be cut into this track with all the racing that's going to be on it tomorrow. And I think that's going to be the biggest issue anybody's going to face is how to actually run the race.
Wow. And a lot of these drivers, you're saying this is their first shot?
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, there's... like I said, I think there's 15 or 16 drivers that have never seen a dirt track, and then there's a couple that have not only not seen a dirt track, but have never been in one of these Camping World Truck Series vehicles. So that's going to be new for them. And
this
then you're going to put in.
Oh yeah.
Then you're going to put in the chance
it's
of rain tomorrow. So that's going to throw everything off.
You guys are gluttons for punishment. This is you know, it's like. You know, I always laugh and say, you know, one of these days in NASCAR, they're just going to say that we're going to send one, you know, 90-year-old lady in a station wagon go in the opposite direction just to get things going, you know. It's or when Bruton Smith says, let's go 4 wide, you know, talking about changing that sport up. But, man, I guess you'll find out real quick who, if, you know, if they've never driven it before, what of these guys can actually drive on dirt.
Yeah. Now, Tim, you were getting ready to say something.
You know, Yeah. Thanks, Stephen. And, you know, Stephen, you've been around the sport for a long time, just like myself and Suzanne has. And, you know, Tony and Tina, you know, they've been around their sport. And there's a lot of fans, Tina. I don't know if you watched the outdoor race last year, but when myself and Suzanne watched it, I mean, you put them trucks on dirt. And just like Stephen said, there's starting early. I think I read it off earlier. They've got starting at 7 p.m. Eastern time and goes all the way to 7:40 Eastern time. They have 5 qualifying races, you know, which we call heat races.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 8:15, approximately, you know, they're going to put approximate time, you know, NASCAR is. They have a last chance race for 15 laps. You know, last year, Stephen, you remember Norm Benning got in on that last chance race. Yeah,
yep.
And, you know, myself and Suzanne, I mean, you know, we was watching that race last year, and I want to give a big kudos, a big shout-out to NASCAR.
that was one of the best races that I have ever watched in my life at Eldora Speedway with the trucks on dirt.
Yep.
Would you agree, and Stephen?
I would say, you know, I would disagree a little bit that it was the best race that they had. I would say that last chance qualifying race was one of the best because, in all honesty, when you looked at it, there wasn't that constant side-by-side battle. And one of the things that so many people are looking for when they get to dirt, get to one of these dirt races, is how we see with the late models, the super late models out here running, where they have those cars kicked 45, 50 degrees sideways coming through the corners. Now, the trucks, because of their weight last year and the way that they had them set up, they were almost like they were on asphalt. And the way that the track was just prepped, it was easy for them. It was very, very little sideways driving. So I think there's going to be some of that's going to change. And if there is, I think fans are going to get more of an expectation. And I'll tell you what, if you're looking for somebody that is going to go out here that could possibly run away with this thing, and it's the guy that ran runner-up last year, if that's the way this race is going to be run this year, if it can get that kind of grip, if you're going to have that cushion up at the top of the racetrack and guys running sideways, Kyle Larson is your man to beat this year. He did it last year, and that battle between him and Austin Dillon last year was an epic battle. But it was very hard to pass or really make that move. And I think the there's a few slight changes that they've made into the way that they're prepping the track, and with that weather, that might play into his hands. But like I said, there's a lot of guys. Both Dillon brothers are going to be part of this year. You got Kenny Strader that's going to be back. So a lot of experience on dirt that is going to be taking part in that. So this is going to be just a great race to watch. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be on Fox Sports 1 tomorrow night starting at 9 p.m. for anybody that wasn't sure where it's going to be at. Also, MRN will have the call, the radio call. So that's one that you don't want to miss either because the guys that are calling that race,
yeah,
a lot of experience around the dirt track. So a lot going on there.
Yes, sir, 10-4, Steve. And, you know, SiriusXM has it too.
Yep, SiriusXM has the MRN call. And I know we just got a couple minutes, but I want to ask you guys one quick question about tradition. And as we get ready to head to Indianapolis for the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series 20th anniversary of the Brickyard, does tradition trump great racing? Just because it's a tradition and it has the history, does it make it a better race even though the actual on-track quality is something that's lacking?
Stephen, that's a real good question. I'll let Tony go first, and I'll go last, because that's a really good question.
I can tell you, I've been involved in motorsports for, you know, the last 35 years, and I don't like the show NASCAR puts on. You know, I obviously watch it and root for this person or that person, but that track wasn't made for NASCAR racing. I think that it's tradition that is keeping it going. But
under 1 minute, Tony. We got under 1 minute.
I'm got to go with tradition. Whoever wants to go
ahead. I appreciate that.
I'd almost have to disagree in the general sense of tradition is when people are stuck on the nostalgia of the way it used to be. And that is a great indicator that somehow the way that it is today is not as good as the way that it used to be. NHRA falls to this all the time. They're always talking about the good old days with Portrome and Mongoose and blah, blah, blah. If it was so great, why aren't we doing things the same way? The reason is it's evolved.
20 seconds, Dana. 20 seconds.
I just say, you know, new fans don't know what the old traditions are. So if you don't bring them good racing, you're not going to get new fans.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, Ken. Yes, sir, thank you. And I want to go with I don't give a damn. Whatever you can race on, you can race on it. Thank y'all very much, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a great night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.